WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be your host for the next hours as this is the prayer, the South Shore come. And a lot of the guests that we have on this radio program are folks who are either elected officials, they are in the know when it comes to upcoming events or conversations. And we look for providing those comments and those conversations to you on a regular basis. As we normally usually start the show out with House Report right after traffic. This week, State Representative Josh Cutler, representing the 6th Plymouth District, will get caught up some of the things that are going on at House. And I believe one of the main focus of our conversation will be a chairmanship. The representative received as a committee that he will be chairing this legislature. We look forward to talking to him about and more. The representative. We are with Mr. Robert, and Robert is the president of the South Shore Conservative. We're going to find out what the has in store, especially when it comes to summer programs, some of the music that they offer, and the education that is available through the conservatory. We'll talk to Robert about that. Again, he's also somebody who is just a newly selected as the president. We'll talk to him, roll, and get to know him a little bit. Then our number two conversation that will encompass the whole second hour. We will be speaking with Summer Schmeling. Summer is a school committee, not only for the Halifax Elementary Committee, but also a member of the Silver Lake Regional School Committee. We'll talk with her, and we'll also speak parent Jen. Jen has four children who are in the school system. And this is a key conversation to the peace flag situation, or the issue about a peace was hung in one of the classrooms and became the center of a controversy. Look forward to that conversation, questions, and follow-ups to this particular issue. So up in just a few moments. Just a quick note, if you do miss any of our programs or any of, especially since the beginning of 2021, they all can be found on the Podbean podcast, or you can just go to the 95.9 WATD and search the drop down podcast. You'll be able to go to our latest podcast. Right now, time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadways, being brought to you and by Brennan Smoke Line at BrennanSmokeShop.com. Don't forget, they're located in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway northbound is a 9-minute ride from the Braintree split up to the tunnel. Then you want to watch for a breakdown blocking the left lane inside the tunnel at the Government Center exit. Southbound's good from top to bottom. Routes 3 South and 24 South are both moving along. And 93 is delay free either way between Braintree and Canton. Route 6 West is still heavy from Route 130 up over the Sagamore with lane restrictions on the bridge. This report is sponsored by the Ad Council. Okay, dads, it's time to do the Cabbage Patch. The Running Man or something more contemporary, the floss. That's right. Dance like a dad with your kids. Learn more at fatherhood.gov. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DiMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeffrey from Brennan's. For once, I am at a loss for words. I'm just speechless. I mean, what can I say? I, like you, am a speck of dust on a rock floating literally in the middle of nowhere. It makes me wonder how people like Charlie Baker think they have the authority to tell this speck of dust how I should blow around on this rock. Newsflash, Baker and cronies, you're just a weeny speck like me and everyone else on this planet. I have only one authority, and last time I checked, the creator of the universe didn't work for the Commonwealth. In your failed attempt to control specks of dust, you cost the Commonwealth billions. I may be a fool, but I'm not foolish like you. Billions of dollars, dudes. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and proper ID is required.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We return for the first segment of Monday Night Talk, and it's time for the State House Report. Joining us for this particular segment is none other than State Representative Josh Cutler, representing the 6th Plymouth District, Hanson, Duxbury, and Pembroke. Representative, how are you today?
Hey, Kevin, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
So it's been a while since you and I have had a chance to chat, but it's always good to be able to catch up. What's the latest? I know that the one thing that I haven't asked you in a while is since being reelected, usually there's committee assignments. Anything new to report on that front?
Yeah, so great news. So I'm very privileged to be serving as the chair of the House Committee on Labor and Workforce Development, which obviously has a pretty broad swath of policy area. And, you know, labor and workforce development issues encompass almost every aspect of our economy. So it's a great opportunity for me. It's a great opportunity for our district because, you know, having someone with a voice right at the table when these decisions are made, they can be really helpful. And I'm, you know, personally really enjoying it, getting to dive in deeper on issues that, you know, I'd already been working on and already, you know, really interested in, but now I get a new chance to kind of to tackle these in a new role. So pretty exciting.
And you've previously been serving on that role in just as a member on that committee?
Yeah, so you typically, you know, when you're you serve on a number of different committees at one time, and I've you know, over time we've talked about served on Ways and Means Committee and Telecom and Energy Committees and some other committees that are really did some really great work. This is different because now I'm the chair of the committee, so it comes with some, you know, additional responsibilities and work, just, you know, trying to manage all that. But that's, you know, it's great. I'm really enjoying it. And again, it's I feel like it's a good benefit for our constituents and for the district too, to have a voice, you know, for here on the South Shore, but to have a voice up on Beacon Hill for the whole state when it comes to these kind of issues impacting, you know, labor, workers, wages, unemployment, small businesses, all that, those kinds of issues. So I think it's something that really is a good fit for me and I think a good fit for our region.
And already there's already news, I guess there's already work that's already being done, especially in the area of unemployment insurance.
Yeah, so right off the bat, Kevin, I got my appointment and then right away we got a fairly complicated piece of legislation that we needed to get out. And essentially what it is, you know, we have an unemployment insurance system, and obviously, you know, people know because of the pandemic, we've obviously had significant levels of unemployment here in Massachusetts. And the, you know, the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund has been a lifeline for many families, providing benefits to help folks, you know, get by during these challenging times. And, you know, the way we fund our unemployment system, it's basically a, you know, a lockbox, to use Al Gore's old term. The money comes in from employer taxes, and it goes into the lockbox, and then it goes back out when employees to pay a claim. And because we've had such an unprecedented level of unemployment, we obviously had really tapped into the Unemployment Trust Fund, and we had to get some federal advances in order to make sure that the funds continued to flow and that we didn't have any interruption of those services and benefits, you know, especially at this kind of critical time. And so because of all that, it gets fairly into the weeds, but because of all that, because there was a significant increase in claims, there was scheduled to be an increase in what's called the schedule of payments for businesses. So they pay based on, it's called Schedule A, Schedule B, Schedule C, different schedules that small businesses pay. All businesses pay per employee into the unemployment insurance trust fund to then pay out those claims. And so because there've been a lot of claims, there was scheduled to be an increase in those rates for employers. So employers were set to be hit with pretty significant increases, up to 60% per employee for 2021, had we not taken any action. And obviously we knew that, you know, this is a tough time. It's a tough time for a business to have that kind of an increase, but especially now when we're just starting to see, you know, the positive uptick in many areas, many sectors. The last thing we wanted to do was see those businesses get hit with a significant cost increase. At the same time, we obviously have an obligation to fund our unemployment insurance, and we know that there are people who need those benefits. So we're sort of can be a difficult tightrope to walk there. So what we've done in the legislature is number one, we passed legislation to freeze the rates and to prevent that increase from happening. So in other words, if we hadn't done anything, it would have been an increase of about 60% in unemployment insurance rates for employers. Employers pay those rates for each employee. And so by freezing the rates for the next 2 years, we've prevented that significant hike from going into effect. So that was a nice, helpful thing for our business community, for our employers, to prevent that significant increase to their businesses. At the same time, we made some important changes to help workers and job seekers as well. And also as part of that was, we know that many businesses, many folks who are independent contractors have received federal benefits, federal assistance, things like the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP loans, or the Economic Injury Disaster Loans, EIDL loan advances, and other federal benefits, which have been a great lifeline for many businesses and independent contractors and individuals who are in business for themselves here on the South Shore. Not to get too into arcane tax law, but the way our current tax system is set up in Massachusetts, if you are a small business, what's called a pass-through entity, in other words, you were a sole proprietorship or an S corporation or an LLC or some other similar type of entity, you would have paid personal income tax on any forgiven amounts of federal assistance that you received. So that was not something I think people were expecting, and it would not have probably come as a bit of a shock to many folks who thought that this was funds that they were getting from the federal government, and now to find out that they would have to pay state income taxes on that, you know, it'd be a tough thing to have happen right now. So we took action in the legislature, working with Governor Baker, to craft basically an exemption for that, for those federal assistance programs, which are forgiven, so that individuals will not have to, so those be exempted from taxable income. And again, I don't want to get bore your listeners, but it's something that is really relevant, really important for a lot of small businesses, especially because those tend to be the ones that are organized as so-called pass-through entities. And so the legislation that we passed, which is now law, signed into law by the governor, does exempt those PPP loan proceeds and EIDL advances from state taxable income, as well as freezing the rates for employers. And then finally, it also makes some important changes for individuals who are receiving unemployment insurance benefits. We know there are still many folks who are out there on the job market looking for work, who are depending on those benefits to get by, to help support their families. And so the legislation that we passed does two things. Number one, it preserves the ability of individuals to continue to get extended benefits. There's a federal trigger that goes into effect based on certain economic levels, and that can turn off our extended benefits. And so by taking action, we essentially remove that risk. And so we preserve the ability of individuals to continue to get those extended benefits. At the same time, we also took steps for folks who are at the lower end of the income spectrum so that they do not have to pay any income taxes on their unemployment insurance benefits. So if you're at 200% of the poverty level or below, the first $10,200 of your unemployment insurance benefits will not be taxable, which mirrors what the federal government is doing. So some important changes that were made. Again, getting into the weeds a little bit here, but I think it's important for people to know this. And this was a bill that we did literally first right out of the block. And so I got kind of handed this legislation as a new chair and, was quickly trying to get up to speed on these issues, which are, admittedly pretty complicated things, but obviously vitally important for employees, employers, for workers, job seekers. So really proud that we were able to find consensus, bipartisan consensus, the House and the Senate, and also with Governor Baker, and that able to get that legislation to the governor, and he signed it. So just a few days ago. So good news.
It's impressive.
For folks.
It's impressive as to how you've kind of hit the ground running during your chairmanship. What are some of the other things that you'll, if you're looking over the next 2 years, the challenges you're going to face when it comes to labor, when it comes to workforce and dealing with COVID, because COVID is going to be around probably, we're going to be dealing with this probably for another year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know. In fact, just to follow up on the issue of unemployment insurance, because that it remains a lingering issue. We have a longer term. We sort of solved our short term issues by preventing this sharp rate increase and giving benefits to workers and to small businesses. But we do have a longer term issue, Kevin, which is the solvency of the unemployment insurance trust fund, because we are making a lot of demands on it, and we don't want to see those costs just be passed on to employers. And so coming up with some sort of longer term solution was also part of this legislation. And so we've established a commission of some stakeholder groups from employers and employees, many of the state's top academics and think tanks, to come up with some recommendations and long-term solutions for our unemployment insurance system. It's something that you don't probably ever think about unless you're a business paying the rates, or heaven forbid, if you're on the receiving end and needing to rely on those jobless benefits to help your family. So that's a new commission that we're going to be forming, that's going to report back by the end of the year with some concrete recommendations to make some reforms and some changes. And I'm pleased to be the co-chair of that committee. So that'll be it'll be a lot of work, but it's something really, truly vitally important for sustaining our unemployment insurance trust fund. So that'll be a big part of our work this term. There's a lot of other issues on the horizon. We just set up our hearing schedule for the rest of the term. And just piggybacking on what you said, we have one hearing just devoted to COVID-related legislation, because we know there'll be an emergency paid sick leave. It's been something we've been working on. There'll be certainly labor and workforce development issues, under the COVID umbrella. But there's a whole host of things. I'm learning more about the rules, the whole role. It's an exciting time to be working these issues, because the nature of work in some cases is changing. I mean, you and I are doing this remotely, and we used to always sit down in the studio and talk face to face, and the nature of work in many other regards is changing. And so, as we sort of re-envision and reimagine what work is going to look like in the future, it's going to change somewhat. Some industries will change more dramatically, others less so. But there's definitely, it's going to be a period of change, and with that will come issues. We see it a lot, just issues. A lot have been discussion lately about independent contractors and rideshare businesses, and what the relationship there is. Wages, we hear a lot of talk at the federal level about increasing the minimum wage. Here in Massachusetts, we've already taken that step, but there's still many issues related to wages that come before our committee. So a lot of different things. I'm really looking forward to learning about all these different issues as we move forward through the hearing process this term, and really excited to have, again, as I said, just to have this opportunity to play a role in these issues.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with State Representative Josh Cutler. It's been a while since we've had a chance to catch up with him, and it seems as though he's been very busy. While we have a few minutes left with you, what are some of the other pieces of legislation that you've been involved with that you want to take a moment to share?
We're at the beginning stages of this new term, and so there's a lot of pieces of legislation that have been filed, I've been working on. I have a new bill this term trying to to incentivize people to pick up those nip bottles, those small liquor bottles we see. I know that's seems to be the number one thing I see in terms of littering on the roadside. So I have a piece of legislation that would increase the deposit amount for those small nip bottles to try to increase recycling of those. Working on some legislation to provide tax credits to small businesses for hiring individuals with disabilities. We did a lot of work on that last term, and that's one thing I think we want to see us continue to make sure we're moving forward as a Commonwealth to make sure that as we, you know, recover from the pandemic, the people who are our most vulnerable, people who have disabilities, also you know are able to recover and to re-enter the workforce. And so want to try to help our business community with that. And we just had a big win finally, a big climate bill that was done. You folks may have heard about that. It was sort of something that would mostly been done last term, and big bill, a lot of different pieces. There was a particular bill that part of the bill that I worked a lot on having to do with appliance efficiency standards, and it was actually an issue that came to me from a constituent in Hanson. And so I'm very pleased to be able to play a role in that and getting that part of the bill through the process. Governor Baker initially vetoed the bill and we made some changes and we were able to come all be on the same page and get a good bill that everyone could support. And that was finally signed into law earlier this year, so just last month. So so that's more of a that was a pretty big landmark piece of legislation. It'll do a lot of things in terms of, you know, expanding our clean energy economy, setting aggressive new standards for reducing climate change emissions, and some other important energy related initiative. So that was something that's already been done. Obviously, a lot more of the work is happening now as we're in this sort of the start of the new session. And I expect it'll be a busy one. It already has been.
Well, we're just a couple of days away from seeing the House budget for fiscal 2022. What role is in your new role? Do you play any kind of a part in this new budget? Or is it you're one of the many state representatives in the House who'll have a discussion on it?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So, you know, in the past, Kevin and I was a member of the Ways and Means Committee when we'd work on the budget. It usually comes out next week. And I know we're very pleased. Again, we have some other South Shore representatives who are now serving on the Ways and Means Committee, which is great. So my role as Chair of Labor and Workforce Development, I guess I've moved from generalist to more specific, specificist, that's not probably the right word. And in the sense of my role in terms of the budget would really be related to labor and workforce development issues. So I would sit down with the chairman, the chairs of the Ways and Means Committee and talk about the budget as it relates to labor and workforce development areas. And so, you know, where are the areas that we might wanna try to direct additional resources to? So my role is a little bit more narrow in that regard. But, you know, again, nice to have that ability to help try to shape, you know, the budget for labor and workforce development issues. You know, that's a pretty big, it's a pretty important part of our economy. So a little bit different, a different role, and one I certainly look forward to do.
We just got a couple of moments left here. Anything, any updates in regards to your district that you want to share or talk about, even your staff?
Oh yeah. You know, I do want to mention, give a shout out. We have hired a new staff member and promoted a couple of folks. And I always try to hire people from the district. I find that just, you know, is great because they know the issues, they know the South Shore, and many times we have folks who are former interns who have worked with us. And so we did hire a new legislative aide, Cooper Leonard, who's a Whitman Hanson graduate and an intern for us in the past. He graduated from George Washington University. So Cooper will be our new legislative aide. And we also promoted Lilla Adams, who is a Duxbury High School graduate. Lilla is now our research analyst for our committee. So it's great to see people who, you know, worked as interns and then worked their way up, assume important positions. And, you know, again, having those local connections as well, I think knowing the district, knowing the towns around here is a big benefit for me. And when people call our office or need help, obviously it's much more helpful when you know, folks understand, you know, where things are around here on the South Shore. So you're really excited for Lilla and Cole and Cooper, and also Cole Angley, my chief of staff, who's originally from Marshfield, is now serving as our chief of staff. So we have a good South Shore group running things up for me up at the State House.
Anything you want to say in closing as we wrap up, or folks want to reach out to you within the district?
Yeah, no, you know, thank you, Kevin, for a chance to chat. I would just stress, because we continue to get a lot of people who reach out about unemployment, having trouble with unemployment system. And the typical email I get is someone who's very, very frustrated, who's tried everything, and finally is going to reach out to their state rep because they can't get any solution and they're having trouble getting their benefits. And we are delighted to try to help them. All I would say and encourage people is don't wait till then. Let us know. We can help much earlier in the process if you're having any trouble. Don't let us be the last call. Let us be the first call, and we'll try to work with anybody if you live in my district, Pembroke, Duxbury, Hanson, and let us know, and we'll try to work with you to get those issues resolved. We know how important it is, you know, when you're relying on unemployment benefits, you know, that's your only source of income. We know how important that is, and we work really hard. And my staff does a really great job working hard to make sure people get those benefits. So I would just counsel to reach out sooner rather than later if that's something that you find yourself in. And people can reach me again. We're still working mostly remotely, but very able to be reached online and call our office or reach out via email. We do a lot of Zooms just like this.
Representative, thank you very much for your time as always.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kevin.
We're going to step aside. And when we return, more Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WAPD. Stay tuned.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
In the year 2020, a powerful replica of the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C. will be permanently displayed at the Veterans Memorial Bicentennial Park in Fall River for veterans, families, and visitors from our local area, as well as all of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. The wall will honor the men and women who made the heroic and ultimate sacrifice in Vietnam. Help us make this very special memorial a reality. Please visit VietnamMemorialWall.org.
Liberty Mutual Insurance Company presents...
...and Doug.
Breathe out and repeat after me. Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
Your bird is eating my candles.
Your bird is eating my candles.
No, seriously, he's making a mess.
No, seriously.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Get a customized quote at libertymutual.com.
What do you get when you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get someone who understands there's an art to listening.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Who's able to hear more than what's being said and can provide tailored mm-hmm. small business solutions that make you feel okay. truly heard.
I understand. Let's get started.
For advice on everything from laptops to the cloud and solutions powered by Intel vPro platform, call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Hi, my name is Rena Lukoski. The Church Hill United Methodist Church of Norwell is planning a two-part annual plant and pantry sale. Part one is online with 44 items available for purchase. The order process will be made available on our website, chumcnorwell.org. Part two of our sale will be a live and in-person plant sale, Saturday, May 8th, in front of the Fellowship Center from 9 to 1. This sale is a highlight of the spring planting season. We hope to see you on May 8th. Masks and social distancing will be required. Thank you.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
We return here to Monday Night talk. Joining us right now is Richie Nante. I think I said it right. He is the newly appointed president of the South Conservatory. Thank you much for joining us.
Thank you for having me this morning.
You may not know that the South Shore Conservatory is celebrating its 50th year of offering performances and classes. What we appointed the president in February.
It was truly amazing. I got the new Christmas, and I'll never forget that phone call. I was just so incredibly moved to be given an opportunity like this one. It's an awesome opportunity in so many ways, and it really feels like an honor to serve an institution like this one. I love being here, and I'm just very grateful. I feel like I've got a place.
Well, folks, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, this is my second in the Boston area and to be back. I actually went to school in Boston. I'm a musician myself, trained as a vocalist at the New England Conservatory. And then I was in the greater Boston area for several years with a nonprofit called Music for that presented concerts for hunger relief. I went away to Boston for other professional opportunities that came up along the way, recently in Connecticut at the Waterbury Symphony Orchestra. I'm grateful, though, to be back in this area, this culturally rich part of the world. And I'm so happy to be here on the South Shore. My wife and I are looking to make her on the South Shore because I feel with a role like this one, just a job, there's really an important component with being a member of the community and being part of the community where one works. And so we're really excited to be on the South Shore and to get to know this community better.
So coming into the job, I would think that once you knew you were going to be the new president of the conservatory, I think obviously you think of goals and some of the things we'd like to do to take the organization to another level. What are some of the goals moving forward?
Absolutely, Kevin. Well, I think broadly speaking, music education has an important part of my life. I like to say that I'm not a music educator, but rather a product of music education. And I can't imagine my own life without music and music education. So I really want to give others that same experience that I was given in life, because I feel like music opens so many doors and the art in general, it pulls one to have experiences that I don't think they're able to have otherwise. So I want to create that access speaking. And I think when it comes to the conservatory, pre-pandemic, we were the largest community music school in England, and obviously the pandemic has shifted the way that we do business, our model, although we're starting to see more of a return to in-person. I really want to see us have an exciting summer and a robust fall. I think we are primed for growth. And when I think about what my aspirations are for this organization, it's to bring the community to the conservatory, also to find more ways to bring the conservatory into the community. And when I say community, not just Hingham, where we have our campuses, but all the towns and cities out shore in between Hingham and Duxbury. And for me, it's to create that community pride so that people in the community are not just aware of the South Shore Conservatory, but that when they think of the conservatory, speak about the conservatory, they have that same sense of community pride that they have about other institutions.
It's interesting that the pandemic, and knowing that the pandemic virtually wiped out all events for 2020, knowing that it's slowly receding, we're starting to see the rollout of the vaccine, and there's the glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. There was a recent announcement that the conservatory regarding offering educational programs this summer. What was that news to share?
Extremely important, and I think it's us making a bold statement. We are committed to come back in person. We're not exactly sure what that's going to look like. There's going to be restrictions. It's not like tight switch on and expecting that we will have a normal summer, but we're committed to being here for our community, offering educational and performance experiences for our region, while also offering, I think, a continuation of virtual opportunities. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we do with music and arts education, so much of that work is at its best when it's in person. But being able to offer it virtually, that expands our horizons in ways that we didn't realize pre-pandemic. So I think moving forward, you'll see the story continuing to offer a hybrid model. I think our summer is of that. One of the great things about summer is the ability to be outdoors. And that also helps with some of the restrictions that we have to look at. So blessed on both our campuses, especially in our Hingham campus, with just incredible outdoor space, an amphitheater that when you drive up, you might think that you ended up at Tanglewood by accident. It's just a wonderful place, and it really invites people together through music arts to learn and to experience and to enjoy and be through performances.
And with us, I don't know if you have the information with you right now, some of the programs that are being offered during summer.
Absolutely. We have really a whole programs that people know from prior summers, like our Piano Week, our Flute Symphony, our Drum Circles, our Summer Festival, our Conservatory Kids, and that's our early child program, our Full Steam Ahead, Rock Band Jam. So we're really spanning the gamut from programs for young children, program children, classical, jazz, rock, really exploring different genres. And we're also virtual opportunities for people to engage and enrich experiences beyond that. We're also working to create, bring back, perform things like Evening Under the Stars and our Duxbury Music Festival.
Now, it's worth asking, you talked about the virtual component. So you're going to be offering classes, not Hingham, but also the Duchess as well, right?
Yes, we are offering some programming, and the majority of programming will take place here on campus. We do have programs taking place in Duxbury as well, and then our Duxbury Music Festival, which is really one of the shiners of the South Shore Conservatory.
Again, if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Robert Chinante. He is the new president of South Shore Conservatory. And we're talking about what's being offered as normal life. And I'm doing the, normal life with, the air quotes. How important are the arts in this day and age when it comes to especially the youth?
I think it's so incredibly important. Again, I think about my own life and how the arts impacted me and my own development. I think about the work that my was as a music educator and seeing how she impacts youth on a daily basis. I think music is just so important to the development of a human being in so many ways. It's about creating great musicians. Of course, we want people to aspire to the highest level possible. But music instills so many of those around collaboration, around critical thinking, build confidence. It helps to build self-esteem. I think music, if we look back, it's an early form of community. And music activates, cognitively speaking, in so many ways that I think we are still discovering. And I really think that we come out of this pandemic with the belief, the understanding that music and the arts are more important than ever before. And I hope that one of the silver linings of the pandemic is that we walk away with a new appreciation for the role they've played. I mean, I think about my own experience. I can't imagine a period defined by isolation, defined by separation, defined by distancing, if I didn't have access to music and the arts. And I think a lot of other people, whether they realize or not, feel the same way.
What is it like to know that you're actually coming to an area that is ripe with the arts? While, the South Conservatory has its place, there are so many other music programs that offered on the South Shore.
I think because of the uniqueness of DO as a music education, arts education institute and a community resource, I think we have an opportunity to partner, work with those organizations. The work that we do is complementary to a lot of the work that they do. And I really feel that the work that we are is collectively so important to South Shore as a region. And I was speaking about this last week with some of our partners from the Plymouth Philharmonic and from the South Shore Arts Center on the Chamber of Commerce board meeting that Foreman generously invited me to. We were talking about the creative economy, the cultural economy, that creative placemaking, and the idea that the arts help to bring people to a region, they help to entice people to stay in a region, and they really improve the quality of life. So when I look at what the conservatory is doing, I think we're part of a greater culture ecosystem, and I really think that we can work together with those other organizations to strengthen the role that arts and culture play on the South Shore.
Live performances and events. Can we expect there to be a scheduled announcement in that area?
We are hoping by April to have rolled out performances, specifically around the Stars and our Duxbury Music Festival. And the plan is to have live performances primarily outdoors. Again, outdoors affords certain facilities that you don't have indoors. We're lucky to have this great amphitheater here on a Hingham campus, as well as spaces that we could utilize in and around our Duxbury campus. So the plan is to have performances. They probably won't be as large scale. We're looking at smaller scale, chamber type programs, but programs that allow people to enjoy the magic of performance. I think, you know, we will be reduced capacity programs, no intermission. We have to avoid things about social congregation. I think our goal is to still provide programs that enable experience, again, that magic of performance, that essence of performance, even adjust the format of to make that happen safely.
And what is it like to have these chats put forth? I mean, you're talking about events where you're able to congregate and to network and sense enjoyment, yet you have to limit it, finish it to a certain degree.
Yeah, I think challenges are opportunity. And listen, I mean, I would love it if we could do larger scale, productions. I think everybody appreciates that. But again, I really think that if we are delivering our mission and we're reaching people performance, even if the format is slightly different, I feel that people walk with an appreciation that they might not otherwise have, didn't present anything at all. And I really feel that pandemic has been a terrible thing. It's organizations like ours to think outside the box and I think it's been a great creativity and innovation, and I think that will continue. Some of the challenges that we have faced, that's what's inspired to have to think differently.
Would not to do anything virtual, have a virtual component on top of having in-person events?
Absolutely. We are looking to expand what we do in person by providing virtual access. And I think having the virtual, it's an extension person. It's not necessarily meant to be a replacement. I think it enhances what we can do in person anyways. If you look at going back several years before virtual was really a big thing, what the Metro Opera has done with their high definition performances in movie theaters. As somebody that has gone to the Metropolitan many times, I know when I first went to an HD performance in a movie theater with my wife, we felt like we experienced the opera in a totally different way. People are finding that with some of these virtual programs. I feel at the end of the day, and maybe this is just me, there's no replacement for live in performance, but I think developing a newfound appreciation for the value that virtual programming offers.
Yeah, and we've been speaking with Finante. He is our guest. He is the president of the conservatory. We're at that point in our conversation, Robert, where I ask you if there's anything you haven't mentioned as we're wrapping up. You want to take a moment to talk about, or maybe there's something we do that maybe you want to reemphasize.
Again, Kevin, I just want to thank you for having me here. I'm excited to speak to folks about South Shore Conservatory. This organization, like you said, has been around now for more than a half century, and I think we have a great legacy to celebrate, an important future to look forward to. I hope that people in our community, even if they don't necessarily enroll themselves or have students, children in our programs, I hope they can come to a work that we do, because we offer so much more than just giving. We have arts-based therapy. We have performances. We have different enrichment programs for our community. I really think a place like the South Shore Conservatory, as I was saying about driving the cultural, it helps to enhance the quality of life here. So if your listeners are familiar, maybe they haven't acted with us in a while, I would just encourage them to go to our website, to check out our programming, and to see what we're about. Come visit us this summer. We have a wedding lineup planned, and I'm also looking forward to the fall. I think the fall is in time for us, and I think we have a lot of potential in front of us.
And if you find enough, the website would
be sscmusic.org.
Well, I want to thank you so much for, and I would welcome you to have further conversations between us. Any new information out, any exciting announcements, I hope that you will seek me out to have these conversations.
Kevin, I really want to thank you for having me today and giving me this opportunity to speak to you and your listeners. It's been a real pleasure.
We are going to decide right now that concludes number one. When we come back, our number two, Monday Night Talk, right here on 99 WATD. Stay tuned.
WATD FM Marshfield. WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
Do you have a special Plymouth 400 license plate? Now more than ever, your purchase or renewal of a Plymouth 400 license plate will go a long way to support the virtual and live events of the Plymouth 400 commemoration. Proud Massachusetts residents who own a Plymouth 400 plate support educational and cultural programs that present a balanced view of the Pilgrim and Wampanoag experience over 400 years. Get your Plymouth 400 license plate through the Massachusetts RMV website or by going to plymouth400inc.org. Click the menu and select Get Involved. A link will take you right to the RMV page where you can order a license plate without leaving home. As long as you continue to renew, you will be supporting not only this commemoration, but legacy projects that will continue for years to come. And you can pass your special Plymouth 400 plate down for generations. Visit plymouth400inc.org today.
This year, high school football is happening in the spring, and WATD is supporting our local student athletes by broadcasting select games live as they happen. Proud sponsors of these games include Abington Bank, Amos A. Phelps Insurance, and Coastal Heritage Bank. Stay tuned for times and dates or visit 95.9WATD.com/sports.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back for hour number two of Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Our conversation, I would say, is an update. Not so much an update, but, you know, the other side of the coin. About a month and a half ago, we actually had a conversation about peace flag. The thought of having a peace flag in a classroom. And it started on with parents and students, school officials, to where it was a conversation with the Halifax Elementary School Committee. Joining us to talk about this item is Summer Schmeling. Summer has been on the radio program before. Summer also is a school committee member for the Halifax Elementary School Committee, also the Silver Lake Regional School Committee. Welcome back to the program, Summer.
Thank you for having me.
And then we have Jen Carroll. She's a parent. She has four children who are in the Halifax school system. Jen, welcome to the radio program and welcome to being on the radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
You got it. So my loose understanding of this is that there were students who wanted to bring a peace flag and hang it up in a classroom or hanging up in a series of classrooms. Now, my understanding also is that this flag is somewhat of a modification of an LGBTQ flag. It also has some flesh tones and a peace symbol on it. So we'll start with Summer. When did you first hear about this ask about a flag? Did it come to you as a parent or did it come to you as a school official?
So I just want to start by correcting something that you said, that students wanted to hang the peace flag. That's not how the peace flags ended up in the classrooms. So a teacher had hung the peace flag in her one classroom prior to the holiday vacation for winter break. And it, to answer your question, when it was brought to my attention, it was brought to my attention as a parent and not a school official. So It was simply brought to me by a student who asked me why this symbol was hanging in the classroom, because he didn't understand where it came from and why it was there.
Okay. Same with you, Jen. When did you first hear about the peace flag and the situation itself?
I have a fifth grader, Ryan, who came back from vacation and had seen the flag in the classroom hung right next to the American flag. And he had asked the teacher what that flag was. And she had said that it's an inclusion flag and it's for everyone. And he's actually asked the question of where on that flag he stands. And she says, well, it's for everybody. And then he had said that the flag shouldn't be hung next to the American flag because that flag was bigger than the American flag. And he said that he knows that there's laws protecting the American flag and that no flag should be hung directly beside or below or above it that's bigger than the American flag. And the response from the teacher was, oh, well.
So how do you, as parents, how did you take this when you heard about it, Summer?
Well, I started by asking questions, you know. I didn't want to have any kind of knee-jerk emotional reaction. I just was wondering why. Why and how did this end up in the classroom without any kind of discussion? So if an 11 and 12-year-old is coming home and saying, I have no idea why this flag is on my classroom wall and how it got there, that's a problem, which is why we have policies in place to avoid sort of those situations, especially during a tumultuous political time, such as, you know, the inauguration and things that were happening at the Capitol. And, you know, I reached out to the administration and asked them how the, you know, who, what, when, where, why, how it ended up in the classroom, you know, was this approved, whatever. And the response I got was, I don't know what you're talking about. Administration had no idea that the teachers had taken it upon themselves to hang these flags. So it started with one teacher. And then apparently, from what I understand, there was a conversation about it. Other teachers wanted them for their classrooms. So one of the staff members in the building went out and got more of them to hang up in the classrooms. But again, this was all done without a discussion with administration. So administration was not aware of the fact that these flags were hanging in the building.
Is there anything that concerns you about the flag? I mean, if it's an inclusion flag, is it, what would concern you as a parent about the flag?
So it's a symbol, right? So a symbol can be interpreted by many people, many different ways. And I think the issue was more that the student who brought it to my attention because they felt like it had no place in the classroom because it was a flag that he had seen at political rallies and it was political in nature. And he felt, I don't know if he felt uncomfortable by it or why, I don't want to speak, you know, on his behalf, but he was asking why is this in the classroom? And I wanted to know why too. And then come to find out, God love these kids, that a couple of the sixth graders took it upon themselves to bring in a thin blue line flag and ask their teachers to hang it on the classroom walls into the sixth grade classrooms because they felt like, well, if, you know, people can be start hanging these symbols and flags on the walls, then why can't we have a symbol that we, you know, align with or identify with or want on the wall also? And so then these students come home and I'm getting calls from parents and having discussions with, you know, 11 and 12 year olds about why they were told no, that their flag could not go up, but this flag was already on the wall. And that is sort of when administration said, well, hang on a second. You know, the teachers came down and asked administration if they could hang the thin blue line flag on the wall, but they never asked to hang this quote peace flag on the wall. So it became, to me as a parent, I was like, well, wait a second, how is that equal access and equal representation of anything? And why was there permission asked to hang one symbol but not another. It seemed a bit discriminatory, in my opinion. And so it just sort of piqued my curiosity again as to the how did these end up in the classroom and why? What was the purpose of it?
Ken, how do you feel as a parent? Do you feel similar to Summer in regards? I mean, what's your understanding in regards to the thin blue, you know, the blue line American flag? And when did you hear about that situation?
I didn't. When Ryan came home from school and told me about the flag, it was something new. It was the first I had heard of it. And then it piqued my curiosity that I, in turn, had to kind of do my homework and search and try to figure out what this flag actually was. And then I had to go through certain images, and I showed him, and he said, no, that's the one right there. And then once I found that flag, I kind of had to do more homework as to where this flag originated from. And when I looked at the website, it's like a spiritual center. And I know that their intent is, well, it's a great thing. It's a great cause. But then I started thinking to myself, well, if this is coming from some kind of a spiritual center and it's kind of like a religious thing that it's coming from, then where do you draw the line state from church? And then I think in somebody else's interview on your show a few weeks back had said that, you know, the thin blue line flag is a political flag. And when I read the description of the peace flag, it had changed. The peace was originally in white, and then 2 years ago they changed it to black for the solidarity of the BLM movement, which I think that a lot of people would agree that that is a political movement. So now they have something that is political in the classroom as well. And I didn't know how I felt about it, because I really hadn't seen it. And of course, at the time, we can't really go into the school. We can't volunteer because of COVID. So just had to talk to Ryan about it. And he said, I forget what the timeline was of when they were removed.
You're just tuning in. We are speaking about the peace flag conversation in the town of Halifax. This is an opportunity to have yet another side to the discussion. Again, the idea of this radio program, we try to be inclusive. It's not a pun, but to make sure that everybody is allowed to be able, because I don't feel that any story has two sides. There are many sides. There are many viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And I welcome them here in fairness, because that's how I'd want it. As a listener, I'd want to hear all sides so I can form my own opinion. We have Jen Carroll. She is a parent who has four children in the Halifax school system. And we have Summer Schmeling. He is also a parent who has children in the school system and is also an elected official on the Halifax Elementary School Committee and the Silver Lake Regional School Committee. The one thing that concerns me, hearing both sides, is, and what scares me as an individual, I'm no longer a parent. I'm now a grandparent. But knowing that politics permeating their way into our school systems. Mm-hmm. Do you as parents have a concern and a fear that politics are slowly seeping into our children's lifestyles, Summer?
Yes, because ironically enough, in the same week that this peace flag made an appearance, or at least came to my attention that it was in the classrooms, I had reached out to the administration of both Silver Lake, because my daughter is in the high school there, and in the elementary school, based on comments that were made in the classroom during learning time regarding both the incident that happened at the Capitol building and a teacher referring to the impeachment of President Trump as a national disgrace. And so I took my ears were already perked, sort of, because, you know, again, we all know January, this whole election cycle was very tumultuous for everybody. And my children, it's no secret that I ran for state representative, and my children were very much a part of my race. And I brought them to a lot of, you know, politically motivated activities. And that's the choice that I made as a parent, to expose my children to that. And I just, when I send my child to school for the day, I don't expect political opinions to be bestowed on them. I'm fully aware and am comfortable with the conversation of maybe what happened at the Capitol or what's going on with the historical nature of the impeachment of the president. Like, I understand that, and I have no issue with that part of the conversation. It's when the opinion is interjected that I take issue with it. And I made that very clear to both, you know, the high school and the elementary school. And I did get a response back, both from the administrators and from the teachers who had made the comments. And that's fine. I'm, again, all for communicating and asking why and getting resolve with conversation and dialogue rather than making accusations. But I do want to say one quick thing based on what you said before. When this first happened and it became came to my attention that a couple of students had brought in the blue line flag, it was not clear to me that the blue line flags that were brought in were necessarily the American flag with the blue line, because there is the black background with the thin blue line flag also. So that was never released publicly. So to assume that it was a specific version of the flag, I think is wrong. And actually the assumptions of what took place and the majority of this conversation is what is really been the driver of the divisive nature of this whole issue, unfortunately, because I mean, I have to say, after listening to the interview that you conducted originally regarding this conversation, it is, the majority of it was factually inaccurate. And it really, I think, is what bothers me the most. And because it's sort of a touchy issue during a very touchy time, the reaction was very emotional from the community and very knee-jerk and very much based on inaccuracies and assumptions. And people didn't stop to ask questions. They just immediately responded and flooded the administration and the school committee with very, very hateful emails and very accusatory in nature without ever asking a question. And I think that really is at the root of what the problem is here, is people are just reactionary instead of taking the time to really find out what had happened. And through respectful dialogue, we could have avoided all of this, but unfortunately that's not what happened.
Isn't the thin blue flag basically set in the backdrop of an American flag, and that it's somewhat modified, or am I incorrect here?
No, there's two. There's the one that's just a solid black box that has the blue line through the center of it. Okay. That's it.
Okay.
And then there's the one that looks like the American flag that does have the, but it's black and white with the blue line.
So what is the particular flag that was asked by the sixth graders to bring in? Was it the black one with the blue line?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. So we still don't know that information.
We're making an assumption that it was the quote, because some people argue flag code, which to Jen's point earlier is interesting that the peace flag, if you want to talk about flag code, actually violates flag code because it's larger and was hanging higher than the American flag in the classroom. However, that, you know, of course, we're cherry picking information to fit an agenda. But, and then people will argue also that the U.S. flag code only applies to taking a American flag that's already intact and then altering it. So, I mean, it depends. I don't want to have that conversation. Your opinion is your opinion on how you interpret it, which actually is probably also part of how we got there, is interpreting the policies that are set in place by the district and the town, which has been part of this conversation also.
So I would ask, during the last conversation I had, there was a conversation about students who actually mobilized and wanted to, you know, they were passionate about the fact of this particular flag. Do we discount that there were some students that were in favor of this particular flag and actually held standouts and wanted to protest this?
No, you can't ever discount any child in the building. You always have to have an inclusive environment. And to that point, I think, and I said this in the last school committee meeting, is I think at the root of all of this is I'm starting to ask myself, at what point did Halifax Elementary School not become an environment that was fostering a safe and inclusion classroom? Like, when did that happen? Because I've been on the committee for 7 years and I've never been approached by a parent or administration or anyone else that has come to me and said, hey, we have an issue here in our school and we are divisive and we're not inclusive. And to me, and as a member of the school committee, I've watched our SEL curriculum change over the years, and the amount of funding that we have, because that's our role on the school committee, is budget is primarily our role. And we have funded professional development for anti-bullying, anti-discrimination. Social emotional learning has been the driver for the last couple of years. We have funded a behaviorist in our building to deal with some of the anxieties, and especially now during this pandemic, it's really been an important role to have this supportive staff in the building for our children. And that ranges from, you know, identity issues to anxiety over homework. I mean, it really, so I feel like we've done a fantastic job both as a community and as a administration and a school committee to foster a safe and inclusive and wonderful learning environment. And now all of a sudden it's not because of a symbol. You know what I mean? So it just seems to come across as very, but no, you can't ignore the fact that there are children in that building that identify with that symbol. And it is perhaps something that's comforting to them, but you also can't ignore the fact that there are children in that building that don't feel comfortable by that symbol. So you're now excluding them because they feel like it doesn't belong in the classroom and their voice is not being heard. Because again, a symbol is interpreted different ways by different people. So I've been approached by parents and these children that have been called racist. They have been called the future Halifax KKK. They've watched their younger siblings be called baby Nazis, all by people standing and holding this peace flag. So how is that acceptable? You know, if we really want to be inclusive, we need to be inclusive of everybody. And so I think that was the reason why it was an all or nothing kind of a thing. We either had to allow, and by we, I mean us as a community or the administration, had to allow every flag under the sun to go up because every symbol under the sun to go up in the classroom based on how that child identified with it, or none at all. Or we need to have a creative solution to allow our children to express themselves and come together and do a project together as a grade, as a class, as a building. And I think for years we've done that. I mean, my son serves on the student council and they're constantly doing projects involving kindness and, you know, going into the younger grades and working with the younger students and developing the Halley Hero, which is our mascot at Halifax Elementary that was designed and voted on by the children. You know, they all worked together to get that. It's just, there are so many other avenues. And it seems to me like the adults have taken this symbol and twisted it into whatever fits their agenda. So for some people, it's a Black Lives Matter symbol. For other people, it's a LGBTQ symbol. And whatever that is that they've identified or aligned themselves with that symbol is how they've driven the narrative, I guess is the best way for me to put it, because I might look at that symbol completely differently than you do, completely differently than Miss Carol does, and completely differently than a 10-year-old boy does.
Well, Miss Carol, you have a tough act to follow. Is I feel that Summer really filled in. You really touched upon a lot of different things, but you also kind of did it with two hats, and not only as an elected official, but also as a parent. As a parent who's sitting back and watching this, Jen, What are your thoughts in regards to first hearing about it and then, you know, sitting and watching and witnessing, you know, it being discussed in front of elected officials and residents who want to, you know, have their input on it.
Well, I don't know if this is like the right way of saying it, but this flag that is supposed to be a peace flag and an inclusion flag and kind of like bring everybody together, I feel like has just completely done the exact opposite. It has caused such a great divide. And it's not, well, I would say some of it, it's not the kids, but it's the parents that have created this scenario and the situation. And it's upsetting because this is a time, I mean, especially right now, where the main focus at the beginning of the school year was just trying to, you know, the principal and the superintendent and the school committee was doing everything that they could. And I don't think that that was recognized, that they've put in countless hours and weekends and days and nights and everything to get these kids back into a classroom and get back to the fundamentals of learning and doing what's most important and getting their education, because it's been a year. And I feel like this whole situation has taken the focus off of the kids getting back, getting their education, getting back into school. It's done the opposite. And, you know, more time has been focused on this than it is of, you know, how are these kids doing? I mean, where are they, you know, educational wise? I mean, I'm sure that they're probably not up to the level where they should be, because it's been a year that they hadn't been back. And, you know, I think the focus was lost along the way. And it's sad that this symbol of peace has kind of done the opposite and divided. And I hope, you know, that there is a peaceful resolution. I hope that, you know, we have to start putting our best foot forward and coming together, not only as, you know, the students, the teachers, the parents, but the whole community, and come forward, find a resolution, and start working together for the cause of these kids and for everybody else.
My understanding is the school committee actually met and discussed this matter in early March, and I believe opened up the floor to hear everybody's concerns before making any kind of decision. I ask you, Jen, as somebody who is, you know, did you have a chance to watch, witness, or participate in it? And do you feel that the proceedings were fair and balanced? Did you feel that the conversation was fair and balanced?
Yes and no, depending on, you know, when someone was making a certain point and then, you know, somebody else would have another point. But I did, they had allowed a few people to speak during that school committee meeting, and I was actually chosen for one of them. And I had stated, you know, that I feel that the American flag represents all Americans, no matter race, religion, sexuality, you know, where you've come from. And that to me is what the American flag stands for. And then I also said that we have taken an abundance of time focusing on this issue, but what we're not focusing on is the plan of getting these kids back safe and getting the teachers, you know, their vaccines, and so that everybody feels safe and welcome and comfortable going back full time. And I feel like both are, you know, they're both very important matters. But it's upsetting because this matter just keeps going on month after month after month. And when we're trying to, you know, get better and move from this pandemic, I feel like it just keeps going into this, and it's just spending a lot of resources and a lot of time. And I think that the focus should have been, you know, what's the game plan for getting these kids back? We and it's not only getting these kids back, but you have parents that haven't gone back to work. They're losing probably a great amount of income. I mean, it's a trickle down effect of everything. And you have kids now that, you know, have anxiety about going back. You know, I can honestly say when my son Ryan went back 2 weeks ago, he was cohort A, so he hasn't seen any of the other kids in the other cohorts. And he came home and he said that he saw his, you know, all of his friends. He hasn't seen in over a year. And that to me, like, that's how kids are. I think at this young age, especially elementary school, they're not seeing what the parents are talking about. They go to school because they want to see their friends. They want to see their teachers. And it's the social part of it. So I'm glad that they're back. But like I said, that we need to come to a peaceful resolution, and it needs to happen soon. We all have to put our best foot forward. We all have to unite.
That was the voice of Jen Carroll. She is a parent with children in the Halifax school system. Also joining us is the Halifax Elementary School Committee member, Silver Lake Regional School Committee, Summer Schmaling, also a parent. Some of my question to you is going to be kind of a two-part question, following up with what Jen had mentioned in regards to the lost focus. You know, it's more the focus about the flags than the real. It's like the lead has been buried here. How do we get the children back into school, get them back in after enduring a year-long pandemic? Give me your thoughts as a parent and as an elected official in regards to the situation, and realizing, you know, this is all happening during a global pandemic.
So, okay, I want to answer your question, but I do need to say something as a school committee member that to set the record straight. So I just wanted to be clear to everybody in the public, because that seems to be a lot of, again, part of the misinformation of this whole situation is the school committee had never taken a vote regarding the removal or hanging or whatever of the peace flags in the classroom, because that's not our role as school committee members. Yep. I'm not sure if you said that we write policy and vote on policy, but we don't ever enact it or enforce it. That's up to the building administration to do that. It's right in the purview of the superintendent. So we never, I just wanted to be very clear. I don't know if you heard the part where I said that we were threatened with litigation, so we were unable to have a conversation publicly about the issue, which is an issue in and of itself, but regardless. Did that cover everything?
Yeah, they covered it. They covered everything.
That, back to the pandemic. So, Kevin, I have to tell you that the toughest vote I ever took as a member of the school committee in my 7 years was in August, when we were deciding whether or not to send our children back to school during this global pandemic. I didn't sleep. I was in tears. I made it a very emotional statement at our school committee meeting. I'm getting emotional even talking about it. To be a member of a board charged with making a decision that may or may not be right. Nobody had a crystal ball. Nobody knew what was gonna happen. We didn't know how this virus was affecting our children. We knew we had families that maybe lived with their grandparents or had family members that were high risk, that perhaps it wasn't a great idea for them to be in the classroom. We also had families in our district that maybe the safest place for that child was in the classroom, because maybe their home life is disruptive, or they're struggling with an abusive situation, or they're struggling with anxieties or nutritional needs that are not being met. I mean, all of these decisions had to come into play. And to Jen's point that she made earlier, again, I've been on the school committee for 7 years, and I think that I've spent more time, hours away from my family, logged into Zoom meetings, getting guidance from Desi that changes every other second, trying to keep up with what's going on in the world regarding this pandemic. I think I've spent more time this year than I have in all 7 combined. It has been an enormous undertaking, and that's not even beginning to touch on the budget implications of something like this. Luckily, Plymouth County secured money for the CARES Act, which was fantastic. And I have to commend our committee for, first and foremost, when it came to the school, making it a priority to ensure that we were fully stocked with all PPE that we needed, and then some, We initiated a one-to-one Chromebook rollout for our children, where we purchased new Chromebooks for all of our students because we knew technology was going to be critical during this time. We purchased new laptops for all of our teachers to support their technology needs during this time. We I believe, as a committee and an administration, went above and beyond to ensure that not only our staff, but and all the way from administrative to the teacher level, but every single one of our students had their needs met. And in fact, before the FDA and the meals program got underway here in Halifax, myself and several other of my committee members took it upon ourselves to go and buy food and make bag lunches and set up a table in front of Halifax Elementary School with masks and gloves, and everything was done, you know, in sanitary condition to provide food for families without any questions asked. You just come up and pick up food. We gave them resources to food pantries if they needed it because we knew people were out of work. We collected donations and purchased food cards for people, for families that we knew we were struggling before our district was able to get all the pieces together for us to roll out a district-wide school food program. So, I mean, our selectmen worked with our fire chief and our school committee to try to initiate a vaccine program for our teachers when they were trying to go back to school, you know, for the rollout now here in the spring. I mean, I can't thank our administrators and my fellow committee members and everyone involved in our community enough who came together during this time to really make sure that we had all the resources we need for all of our children.
If I could ask you just a quick follow-up, Summer, and that is, you had mentioned in regards to policy. I understand that your committee doesn't write policy, but that your officials, your administration of the schools are the ones who bring forth policies, or maybe you have subcommittees that put something together for the committee to ultimately vote. Which is it? Is it that you have your administration or your administration team, they put the policies and procedures together and it's ultimately a vote by your board or for members to look at it and offer suggestions?
Yeah, so what we have is we have a policy subcommittee on the school committee. We meet probably about once or twice a year. So we'll get recommended policies sent down by MASC, which is the Massachusetts Association of School Committees. So between that and our administration, who feel that we may need some more district specific policies outside of what's recommended for, you know, all schools in the entire state, they bring them to the policy subcommittee. They're usually fairly dry, and they're a lot of times, you know, touching up language, things like that. They're actually pretty boring meetings, but I do sit on that policy subcommittee. I have for years. But that committee itself is actually regional. So there's representation from the administration, Kingston, Plimpton, Silver Lake, and Halifax all meet together on the subcommittee. And then we bring our policies back to our individual committees, and then we vote to accept them at our individual committee meetings. And then we all go back, you know, as a joint board and say, you know, these are our new district-wide policies. So there may be some policies here at Halifax Elementary that we don't have at Dennett Elementary in Plimpton. And, you know, but for the most part, district-wide, we do have a policy manual.
So is there a policy in regards to flags or symbols that are displayed in the classroom? And was that part of the decision the committee levied when you know, after finally hearing the issue and then giving your opinion on it?
Yeah, because really, again, at the end of the day, our opinion as a committee didn't really matter, to be frank. Policy is really what was the deciding factor in this decision. Right. So we actually also do have a town policy. I'll read that one first just because it's really short. But our town policy here in Halifax reads, banners in municipal buildings, any group or organization wishing to affix a banner to any municipal building must submit a written request to the Board of Selectmen along with a picture or a drawing of the proposed banner showing all measurements and colors. Request will be reviewed and approved or denied on a case-by-case basis. No decision by the Board of Selectmen will be considered precedent for setting future requests. And if I may, I would like Ms. Carroll to speak on what had happened regarding this policy this summer and the blue line flag at the recycling center. Because when I was listening to your interview with the, you know, prior to this, I did hear a reference to that. And I just want to clarify, because that was also an inaccurate statement that was made regarding that situation, if it's okay with you.
Sure, as long as it's within the confines of the topic of the discussion, sure. Jen, do you want to follow up on that? And
sure. So with regard of that thin blue flag that was hung at the recycle center, that flag was actually hung there for just about 3 years. And it was next, it went the American flag, the Betsy Ross flag, and then the blue line flag. This flag was actually given to one of the members because he is very good friends with the late Michael Chesna's father. And this flag was actually owned by the late Michael Chesna himself. It was one that he hung in his house. And when the ends kind of started to fray, he gave it to this individual and he proudly displayed that flag. And it had sat there for quite a few years. And it was early fall. I went to the recycle center and I spoke to this individual and he was upset. And I just went over to him and I said, are you okay? And he said, well, we got a call first thing this morning saying that this flag had to be taken down immediately. The person who called represents the town and said that I'm going to stay on the phone while you remove this flag because that flag is to be taken down by opening time. And somebody called to complain that they found that flag offensive and it shouldn't have been hung there because it's a town building. And he had to take it down and that was it. And, you know, he was upset because it's all hearsay. But I mean, it's the late Michael Chesna's flag and we all know he passed horribly, you know, in the line of duty. And, you know, this all goes back to, you know, nobody's actually taking the time to hear the whole story, the facts. It's taking something that actually didn't involve them personally with their child and they're running the story with it, but they don't know the whole story. As my father-in-law would say, the story behind the story.
If I could ask both of you, and we'll start with you, Jen, and then you, Summer. As parents, you know, looking and listening to the two conversations that I was privileged to be a part of with both sides of at least the two sides representing at the moment, this conversation, knowing that there are individuals who are mobilized by the peace flag who felt a sense of inclusion, mm-hmm. is there, and I'm asking this again as parents, and knowing that you had a child who's like, oh, I didn't feel included because the flag didn't make me. Is there some kind of a lack of inclusion in our school system where students are feeling this way and they're seeing different they're feeling that a flag or a symbol is a way to feel included in something? Is there something missing, not only in the Halifax school system, but in our school systems today, Jen?
Well, that's where I feel kind of alarmed that this flag, you know, the teachers took it amongst themselves to put it up. And then it was upsetting to hear that, you know, these kids needed this flag to feel included. I have volunteered in this school for over 7 years. And I even had teachers joke I should have been on the payroll. I've been in there so much. But with that being said, we're very fortunate to live in this great community and have these amazing teachers. Watching them with the kids, they don't talk to them like they're their students. They talk to them like they're their own children. I've never, ever seen any teacher or staff member or administration talk to another kid, belittle a kid, or make them not feel included or any of that. I mean, the whole school is a bully-free zone. There are laws in Massachusetts for all schools and districts that there's laws to protect kids for regardless of your gender, your religion, your race. So I didn't know why this flag needed to be put up. I mean, should there an alarm be going off that there was incidences that haven't been reported that kids didn't feel included?
Okay. Summer, same thought. Can you empathize? What are your thoughts in regards to, you know, regardless of what side you are on this conversation, that there are individuals, whether they're adults or even students, who feel compelled that they feel included in this flag, its symbol or its meaning? You know, is there a way to be empathetic, or is it a matter to be concerned or alarmed that our culture these days is more about a symbol and be connected, or that we're not doing enough to connect our children with each other and teaching them inclusion?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself than what Miss Carol just said. I feel like once we start, my opinion is, if we need an inclusion symbol at Halifax Elementary School, then our student body needs to come together and make one together, not have an outside symbol be brought in and have the children be told that this is what the interpretation of the symbol is. No, let's have a conversation as part of our SEL curriculum, our social emotional learning, which we have blocks for in school. Let's have a conversation about diversity and what it means to feel included and what it means to have your voice heard. And everybody do a project together without an outside influence. That's how I feel about it. Is I think that if you really truly want to make this about the children, and you really truly want to make this a place for them, I think they already have that. But if you feel like we need a symbol in the classroom that makes every child feel like they are welcome, then leave it up to the children to create that symbol. That's kind of how I feel about it.
You're tuning in. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Say your piece.
I was going to introduce you and say, again, if you're just tuning in, we have Summer Schmeling, who's a parent and an elected official to the Halifax Elementary School Committee and Silver Lake Regional School Committee. And Jen Carroll, who is a parent, has four children in the school system. As we have, we got about 10 more minutes in our conversation here. Is this particular issue, has there been a resolution? Have we seen a, you know, punctuation at the end of this long sentence, or is there still a conversation that's percolating and continuing on? Jen?
My personal opinion, I think there's still some drama going on with it. I'm open to discussion with anybody. And this is my take on it too, is we're all very lucky to live in a small town, small community. Just about everybody knows everybody, and all of our kids have either played sports together or there's been some kind of interaction with the parents and the students. I just feel it has kind of created this divide where I know a lot of people are friends, whether it's social media or you have their phone number because your kid was coached by so-and-so or whatever. So there just should have been, I mean, everybody's an adult, so there should have been a private conversation, a reach out, and just said, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, and that should have happened. It shouldn't have gotten to this point. It all became hearsay, and I'm going to make this now my movement and do this. But it should have just been held kind of privately, as, you know, a parent to a parent. You know, what happened? Let me hear your story. Okay, and, you know, I'll tell you my story. And then I feel like if the adults kind of did adulting and talked about this, then I don't think that there would have been this much division in this town regarding a flag that's supposed to represent inclusion and peace. There should have just been a conversation between adults, and just both sides could have heard the facts from both parties. And then I think from there could have been some kind of a happy medium. And I'm hoping, I don't, you know, I'm hoping that there is a resolution soon, like ASAP, because we need to really start focusing on the bigger pictures and get these kids caught up in where they should be right now.
Summer, your thoughts?
So there was a group of parents and administrators that got together to have a meeting regarding inclusive symbolism in the building, because, you know, the peace flags came down. So they wanted to, I guess, replace them with something else, which had more members of the community been part of the conversation. Again, I would have suggested something like, maybe we should have all of the kids draw on their handprint what it means to them to feel included. And if a kid wants to draw a rainbow, let them draw a rainbow. And if a kid wants to draw a blue line flag, then let them draw a blue line flag. Maybe they want to draw mom and dad going out for ice cream after their soccer game, because that's what they feel, you know, makes them feel special and included. But again, I think the adults have sort of hijacked the conversation, and it's not about our children anymore. And that's really what makes me sad as a parent. And these, some of the people who are the ones touting this message of peace and inclusion are the ones spewing the hate-filled rhetoric, and the ones that when I try to reach out to them, whether it be on Facebook or otherwise, I can't, because they've blocked me because I have a different opinion than they do. And I find that the adults have just completely taken this conversation away from the kids. And if you ask the kids, I think they're frankly sick and tired of it, and they want it all to go away, because this is not what they want. They want to be riding bikes with their friends. They want to be back at school all the time, you know. And frankly, as a school committee member, I'm tired of hearing about it, and I need to focus on a budget and the end of this fiscal year and the end of the school year and how we're going to roll out next year, because we are swamped with all of that right now. And we have town meetings coming up where we have to vote, you know, a multi-million dollar budget, and we have negotiations with teachers coming up, and we have a plethora of things that we need to be focusing on. And every time I think the issue's dead, it's not. And it's unfortunate, but you know, it is what it is, and we just have to keep rolling with the punches, I guess. And it's hard sometimes to sit there and take it, honestly, because I feel like a lot of us have done that and have not wanted to speak out. And I can say personally that I felt like a little apprehensive speaking out myself, because after a certain community member decided to go on in the news and have a press conference in front of the school, cherry picking information about what was happening in the building, some of the comments I read on that news site afterwards were, how can these kids feel politically marginalized? They should publish the names of their parents and the addresses in which they live. It's like, really? You're gonna threaten us, really? Like, that seems to be a little, so I again, to Jen's point, I feel like it's caused more of a problem than it has a resolution. I just hope that we can move forward. And the school committee our last meeting has decided to make a inclusion and diversity subcommittee as one of our subcommittees on the school committee, on the board. And we felt like this was important because it being a subcommittee of the school committee, you're bound by open meeting law. And so everything has to be open and transparent. Minutes are recorded. Community members are welcome to participate in the subcommittee. Meetings are public. So it kind of circumvents the little secret pocket meetings that are going, maybe not secret, but the little pocket meetings that are going on with, that are partisan, frankly. And this way it'll allow for an open and fluid discussion, and hopefully will lead to resolve moving forward, because that's really what we all want at the end of the day.
Well, it's interesting. I say this just as, again, I can speak as a parent, not a parent that has a child in your school system, but I have grown children, I have grandchildren. And, you know, I remember the days of seeing parents living vicariously through their children, especially playing sports. And come on, Johnny, you can do, you know, you see it all the time. But then now it's like nowadays, sports aren't the only thing that parents are living vicariously through their children. It's now school policy and, you know, what's happening with the kids in the classrooms. I get it. I understand. And especially during a pandemic and knowing that we all have so much frustration, and you're looking for a vent so your head doesn't blow off your shoulders. It's definitely understandable. And I understand the scope. And while maybe during my conversation with you know, two conversations, I may not have put it in perspective. I hope that I was good. I did a good enough job to be able to facilitate a conversation between the individuals that I'm chatting with, you know, about the situation. Anything in closing? I know that one quick note, I believe, Jen, you're a candidate for office. And yes. I think that, Summer, you are up for re-election. Is that accurate?
Yep.
Jen, I mean, what is it? Go ahead, Summer.
No, I was just going to say that there was a vacancy on the Silver Lake Regional School Committee, and I was unanimously appointed to fill that position by the Halifax representative at Silver Lake, the chairman of the Silver Lake Regional School Committee, and two of the selectmen here in Halifax. So I was very honored to be chosen for that position because, again, with my experience with the budget and trying to get our kids back to school, it seemed like a reasonable transition to have me fill that spot. So with my daughter being a sophomore at Silver Lake, I did decide to run for the 2-year slot at Silver Lake for the school committee there. And to be very honest with you, my term is up at Halifax Elementary, and I was debating whether or not I was going to run for elementary again. But we actually have 3 open seats on the board, and so, or there are going to be 3 open seats on the board. So with that, you know, high rate of turnover in such a tumultuous time, both regarding the budget and the pandemic, I thought it was more of a responsible decision for me to try to stay on the committee and sort of see my responsibilities and duties through, because I feel like we're sort of left in the middle of this right now. So.
Okay. We've just got a couple of moments left here. Jen, is this your first run? Are you running for school committee?
Yes, I'm running for the 3-year position on Silver Lake because I have the triplets. And then it also will transition to the high school. And I'm also running for the 3-year position for the elementary, where I currently still have a 5th grader that would be going into the 6th grade. And I will say I understand. I've attended numerous school committee meetings throughout the years that my kids have been in the school system, and I understand the responsibility of this role. It's, you know, you have to, you know, you work with the curriculum with in the frameworks of the state. You have to work with the school calendar. And you also work with the teachers union for contracts. And one of the biggest thing is that it's the budget, and the budget hits everybody's wallet, regardless if you have a child in the school system or not. Yep. Whether you're elderly or you're living paycheck to paycheck, I have to think of both sides as not only a parent, but as a taxpayer for this. And I take the role very seriously when it comes to that, because everybody wants more money in their pocket, especially right now after coming out of this pandemic.
I definitely agree. Well, ladies, that's all the time that we have. I thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedules to talk about this particular issue. And again, hopefully there is, and no pun intended, some sort of agreement or peace that will be brokered, and the folks that we can move on and we can tackle the important things like budgets and schools and things like that. So I thank you both. Again, we've been joined by Summer Schmeling and Jen Carroll, and talking about peace flags and symbols and flags in general. That's all the time we have here on Monday Night Talk. We will see you again next week at 6:15 p.m. God be willing. Have a good evening.